Hi everyone, my name is Qin Wumeng from Michigan State University, and today I'd like to talk about a very interesting color of light and how it relates to regulation of flowering of greenhouse ornamental crops. And we observed a very interesting dose-response relationship between green light intensity and flowering time for some species. So before I get started, I'd like to give you a little background information about regulation of flowering of greenhouse crops. When we have natural short days in winter time, especially in northern climates, we can use electric lighting to either promote flowering of long day plants or inhibit flowering of short day plants. And this can be done by either delivering light at the end of the day, which is called day extension lighting, or during the middle of the night, which is called night interruption lighting. The spectral distribution of photoperiodic lighting is very critical to flowering time, and here we're looking at the four major wave bands with relevance to flowering. They are blue, green, red, and far red light. In particular, red and far red radiation are very important to promote flowering of long day plants, and for some species such as snapdragon, far red is essential for most rapid flowering. And for the other side of the spectrum, we're looking at blue light, which tells a different story. When blue light is delivered at a low intensity of about 2 micromoles per meter squared per second, it's now perceived as a long day signal by both long day and short day plants. But when its intensity reaches around 20 to 30 micromoles per square meter per second, blue light can, in fact, regulate flowering very effectively. When we look at the middle part of the spectrum, green light is now extensively studied when it comes to regulation of flowering. And when you dig through old literature like this, you may run into sentences like this indicating that green light is largely ineffective to regulate flowering of photoperiodic crops, including long day and short day plants. But another paper published in the early 80s indicated otherwise. The authors found that to inhibit flowering of a short day plant perilla, green light only had to be less than 1 micromole per meter squared per second to be a very effective long day signal. So we wanted to find out whether green light would be effective at controlling flowering of some species, but not all species. Another reason why we wanted to incorporate green light in photoperiodic lighting was so that we can create a pleasing work environment by creating white light using blue, green, and red diodes. So the objective of this experiment was to answer this question: can green light control flowering? We postulated that yes, green light can indeed control flowering of some, but not all, greenhouse ornamental crops that respond to photoperiods. In this experiment, we delivered 9-hour short day treatments with or without additional 7 hours of day extension lighting from the following LEDs with green light at 0, 2, 13, or 25 micromoles per meter squared per second, or red, white, and far red light at 2 micromoles per meter squared per second. Green light at 0 micromoles essentially means the short day control with only 9 hours of natural light. Here we're looking at the spectral distributions of green LEDs and red, white, and far red LEDs used in this study. And we can see that the peak wavelength for green LEDs was around 521 nanometers. We had our plants grown in a controlled greenhouse environment with a temperature set point of 20 degrees Celsius. And here we're looking at the actual temperature data for two replications. As we can see, we were able to maintain the actual temperature to be around the set point. We also measured and recorded greenhouse light intensity data, and here we're looking at the photosynthetic photon flux density for two replications throughout the whole experiment. Using this data, we calculated the daily light integrals, and the DLIs for these two replications were 11 and 8 moles per square meter per day, respectively. So now let's take a look at the data we collected. When we saw the first visible bud or inflorescence, we collected data and calculated time to visible bud or inflorescence. We also recorded time to first open flower. We measured stem length and counted leaf number. For some species, such as petunia, we also counted branch number. Here are the results. For the Lundy plant Agerium Hawaii Blue, we're looking at plant height. You can see that plants grown under green light at various intensities were generally shorter than those grown under red, white, and far red light. And this is not surprising because we know that with the inclusion of far red, we can induce shade avoidance responses, including excessive stretching or stem elongation. This is the data for time to flower plotted with different green light intensities with a control of 2 micromoles of red, white, and far red light. It's very surprising to see that at a low intensity of 2 micromoles per meter squared per second, green light promoted flowering of the Lundy plant Agerium. As we increased green light intensity even further to 13 or 25 micromoles, flowering was not further promoted, and green light at all these intensities were as effective as low intensity red, white, and far red light. Here we're looking at another Lundy plant, Petunia Easy Wave Burgundy Star. For main stem length data, we observed similar responses to Agerium. Plants developed shorter stems in general under green light compared with red, white, and far red light. And when we look at the branch number of the plants grown under these treatments, we observed reduced branching when we had far red light. And reduced branching is also part of the shade avoidance response caused by far red radiation. Here's the data for time to flower for 2 petunia cultivars. The trends are similar. At 2 micromoles per meter squared per second, green light was effective at promoting flowering, although it was not very effective compared with red, white, and far red light. As we increased green light intensity from 2 to 13 to 25 micromoles, flowering time continued to decrease. And here is the dose-response relationship between green light intensity and time to flower. So take-home message here is the brighter green light is, the faster flowering occurs. The third Lundy plant, Snapdragon Liberty Classic Yellow, responded totally differently. Here you can see that flowering occurred most rapidly under red, white, and far red light, but not under green light. And if we take a look at the data for time to flower, we see that at a low intensity of 2 micromoles, green light did not promote flowering of the Lundy plant Snapdragon. As we increased the intensity of green light to 13 or 25 micromoles, flowering was promoted, but only marginally. The most effective treatment here to promote flowering was the red, white, and far red light treatment. So for Snapdragon, it really requires that additional far red radiation. We know that light is perceived and used through photoreceptors, including phytochromes and cryptochromes. And if we look at the spectral absorbance, the absorbance spectra for phytochromes, we see that they mainly absorb red and far red light, and for cryptochromes, on the other hand, they mainly absorb UV and blue light. Now, if we superimpose the spectral distribution of green light in this graph, we see that green light is only weakly absorbed by these photoreceptors. But this doesn't mean that green light is now mediated by these photoreceptors. Maybe these photoreceptors are very sensitive to green light for some species. We know that phytochromes can be converted back and forth between its inactive PR form and its active PFR form. And when we have light, or especially red light, we can convert phytochromes from PR to PFR and elicit certain responses, such as seed germination and flowering. At night, or upon far red radiation, however, we can convert phytochromes slowly back to PR from PFR through a slow decay process. We calculated relative PFR accumulation using the spectral data and the phytochrome absorbance data. As we increase green light intensity PFR accumulates more, PFR is a form that promotes flowering of long day plants. So for the long day plant Agerhythum, which responded very well to low intensity green light at 2 micromoles, perhaps the threshold for PFR accumulation is very low so that all treatments would be similarly effective. But for some other species, such as Petunia, perhaps PFR accumulation would require higher threshold level so that at 2 micromoles green light would not be as effective as green light at higher intensities or red, white, and fire light. We did the same experiment on a smaller scale with different Arabidopsis lines, including a wild type, 5A mutants, and 5B mutants. We grew them under green light at 25 micromoles per meter squared per second, or red, white, and fire light at 2 micromoles. The data here is time to flower. We see that compared with the wild type, 5A mutants flowered later, and 5B mutants flowered earlier. These results are consistent with the previous notion that 5A is a floral promoter, whereas 5B is a floral inhibitor. So we propose that flowering is a coaction between these different members of phytochromes. Both 5A and 5B have PR and PFR, except that they work differently. For 5A, PFR promotes flowering of long day plants, whereas for 5B, PFR actually inhibits flowering. We can calculate the phytochrome photo equilibrium for different light treatments. So in this case, the phytochrome photo equilibrium, or PPE, indicates the proportion of PFR in the total phytochrome pool. The PPE for green light was 82%, and that for red, white, and fire light was slightly lower at 68%. So for some long day plants such as Agerhythum and Petunia, perhaps 5A is the major player that mediates flowering, because all these treatments, green or red, white, and fire light, would accumulate enough PFR in order to promote flowering through 5A. However, for some other long day plants such as Snapdragon, perhaps 5B plays a more important role than 5A in regulation of flowering. As we reduce the total amount of PFR using red, white, and infrared light, we can have less inhibition on flowering through 5B. In summary, green light can indeed control flowering of the ornamental crops we studied. I only presented data on long day plants due to the limitation of time, but we also found similar results with short day plants, and that's very surprising. At a low intensity of 2 micromoles per meter squared per second, green light was effective for regulating flowering of some, but not all crops. And when we elevated its intensity to 13 or 25 micromoles per meter squared per second, green light was effective for almost all crops. The only exception was Snapdragon. And with that, I'd like to thank the following companies and individuals who provided support for this project. I'd like to thank you for your attention and take any questions you may have. Chris. So that's a very good question. The question was for the Petunia cultivar we studied, under green light, the star pattern did not occur, but under red, white, and fire light, it did. And I think, you know, it's a very interesting observation. We did make that too. And I think that might be due to the promotion of flowering through different modes of wavelengths. So green light and far red and red light might work differently, and that might have impact on the flower patterns. Mark?
You mentioned that you calculated the amount of far-red phytochrome. I was wondering, first of all, how you do that, and secondly, how relevant that is, that there are five different forms of phytochrome that all may affect flowering differently.
So the question is, I calculated the accumulation of phytochrome PFR form, and how did I do that? I did that using the spectral distributions of the light treatments, and also I used the absorbance spectra based on the paper published by Sager in the 80s. And using that data combined with the spectral data, you can actually calculate the relative amounts of PR and PFR. And with that, you can further calculate the PPE. So that's just the relative accumulation of each photochrome form. And remind me your second question. Yeah. Yes. Yes, so with different forms of phytochromes, different members of phytochromes, their responses and their functions are different. And I think there are limitations definitely with our proposed mechanism because the used absorbance data are from back before based on the data on old seedlings. And there's definitely space for improvements. And in the future, we might do some more mechanistic studies to look at how specifically different forms or different members of phytochromes will be involved in this process. And we also note that there are redundant functions among these members to regulate flowering. All right, I think that's enough time. Thank you very much.